I want to thank the organization of the conference to give me this opportunity to talk about the work. And ahead of all, I would like to acknowledge all my collaborators in this field. Two of them are in the audience. They were José Carrillo, who's now chair position at the University of Barcelona, and Vlad Panferov, who's currently at the University of Victoria in Canada. And I was fortunate enough that they came as postdocs to work with me in Austin. And I like to say that with José arrived, perhaps it was in 98, I had heard of this experiment. I had seen the soliton and never thought I could do anything about it. And there was a tour organized by Rafael de la Llave to see the experiments, and we went with José, and we immediately get excited, start to talk about some of the postdocs there, and we see they are using your yellow book, Cercignani and Pulverenti, and trying to dig into the equations. And I told José, maybe we have an edge here, let's try to get involved in it. And indeed, we did get involved, and we did a little bit, and we got stuck immediately, and then Sasha Bobilev enters into the scene, and that's what initiated this series of collaborations. So, okay, after what Isaac introduced, I would just go very fast in a few slides, because perhaps I have material for more than half an hour, certainly, but I do it fast, appealing that the audience is quite knowledgeable in this. So, inelastic collisions is deviations from a specular reflection. The scattering angles get to be reduced after the collision with respect to post-relative velocity. The framework that I'm going to use here, and as I said, I have no means to make the justification to start with an n-particle system to write this Boltzmann equation. You have to go to the Enscott limit, and there has been justifications, and in particular, night surveys, for instance, by Carlo Cercignani and many other people from a mathematical viewpoint. Okay, what do we get in here? Well, I'm going to get many things, collision at cross-section, and because we are going to consider the Hertzsprung type of problem, and mostly with a right angular cutoff assumption on the differential cross-section. And in fact, after we do all the analysis, many of the things can be done even for what we call variable Hertzsprung, this exponent between 0 and 1. The exponent equals to series Maxwell molecule models. The exponent 1 is classical Hertzsprung. But many of the things you do here, estimates and so on, would carry on for all those exponents. And then I have it in green, and they will be gamma. Used to call it lambda, but I realized I use lambda for another thing, and so I would go back and forward. Inelasticities here is the loss of microversibility if the restitution coefficient is strictly less than 1. So you might, in principle, look at this equation in this form, with exception of the Jacobian of the transformation, which is proportional to the inelastic restitution coefficient written in this form. It will be nothing else than what it looks, an innocent small perturbation from classical theory of gases, bilayer with conservation of energy. I'm going to tell you things that we have done on the equation properties and analysis of it. We do a trick, which I to my understanding is the most useful tool in dealing with Boltzmann. I don't know how to do anything. I mean, you would not be able to read a paper without changing variables first. And the variables that you do, the change of variables to take them to center of mass and relative velocity. How do you do that in the inelastic framework? Well, it's pretty much like in the elastic one. Okay, in the elastic one, let me say it, and let me take you back for a minute to what elastic theory is. But the gamma equals to the alpha equals to 1 would give you. Sorry, I should put the. Okay. So this direction here will be the direction that corresponds to specular relative velocity reflection with respect to the plane orthogonal to the direction of the collision. So you still use the same direction, which is called sigma, to change the coordinate. However, the new relative velocity in the inelastic case has to be written as a linear combination of the previous relative velocity plus the absolute value of u, and here is sigma, which is the direction that goes into the classical specular reflection. So when alpha is equal to 1, you immediately, okay, alpha is equal to 1, this parameter beta is 1, this goes away, you recover your standard coordinate in center of mass and relative velocity for elastic theory. And another comment is beta, which you will see all over, is actually a number between 1/2 and 1, and has a very nice geometrical interpretation that I'll show you in a minute. Okay, so again, as I repeat here, we can consider the variable CR problems with gamma is equals to 1, with gamma equals to 1, Hartzius and CO Maxwell molecules, what is known as Maxwell molecules, and I will talk about that. Okay, so the first things I sort of decided to prepare this lecture for a more non-expert audience, so I sort of took some slides out, and I hope I still you get to see. First, deviation is, as mentioned by Isaac, you will not have your classical H theorem, and by said classical H theorem is look what happens with the evolution when the equation gets to be multiplied by log of F and integrate it. And in this case, what you have is a portion which is the classical entropy dissipation rate, which will be negative. This is the negative function. But you have a positive contribution, which is proportional restitution coefficient. So unless you play with the restitution coefficient and do things and say, you know, that this, for some reason, this number would go to 1 for long time dynamics or something, you are stuck and you have to deal with that fact that you don't have this entropy dissipation rate. And so far, as far as I know, this, it's not known if there is any other multiplier for the equation for which you can have a Lyapunov function, so to speak, or somehow a decay in time expression, or so it would give decay in time, decay in time. Energy dissipation rate. Well, in exchange, you get that energy is not going to be conserved. This is the loss of microreversibility, and you can compute that exactly. So here I didn't bring the slide that gives me the energy identity, which is proportional. Actually, would be a quantity pretty much like this expression, but here it would be gamma plus 2 because you have computed the energy, and it's just 1 minus alpha squared times the density. And immediately you can do by means of Jensen's inequality to get that energy inequality, or, you know, or kinetic energy inequality, for which you will get a lot of information. One important comment, if you take Maxwell molecules, if you take gamma equals to 1, then you have an energy identity because the calculation is exact, okay? And still it's a good one because it has the negative sign that will show decay. So from now on, what I will discuss is the space homogeneous problem. We have done something very recently with Vlad and Panferov and Carlo Cercignani for the space inhomogeneous with this with inelastic specular reflection, but for that I would need another time, and I don't have the slides either. Okay, so let me remind you what is the elastic collision mechanism. All of you know it. And I want you to just focus a bit on this. I took this slide from Brent Wember paper, one of his papers. Essentially, elasticity means that the four velocities involved in the interaction would lie on a plane, on the same sphere, and they share center of mass. And that is conservation of momentum and energy. However, if you do the same diagram for the inelasticity, okay? And I want to bring it to your attention because there are some estimates later on which are, you know, what I want you just to capture from here is the fact that the what is the difference with inelasticity? You can actually track it with elasticity, track it very nicely. This is the beta I was talking before. Is beta is 1 plus E over 2. E is less than 1, so it's measuring how much the center, I mean, so you want to localize the post-collisional velocity. You get your original relative velocity given by dv star, trace a circle of that diameter, and then deviate the center of that circle, which would be center of mass, by a quantity which is proportional to 1 minus beta, and then trace two circles that are tangent to this direction, then look for the direction n of the collision. That would give you the reflective version of the collision. Then you localize these two points, and then they satisfy center of mass, and you immediately obtain them. And in addition, what you see is a deviation from this direction sigma to this direction omega. Direction of the omega is the direction that contains the post-collisional relative velocity. It's not going to be the one that corresponds to the classical specular reflections of relative velocity. And so it would be an angle there that you account for. But this is a quantity that if you have good collisional or differential cross-sections on, you know, functions of the angle that are nice, we will get a control of that. Okay? And for that, we get basically most of the analysis is somehow drawing all the ideas of Boltzmann equation for elastic collisions with all taking this the deviations into account, somehow, roughly speaking. Okay. The weak Maxwell form, this is another very nice way to deal with equation. Most of the theory that deals with energy estimate uses this fact. The nice thing here is that in the equation, actually, if you see the equation, you would not recognize the inelasticity. And that brings somehow a lot of misleading comments. The inelasticity only comes is in the change of coordinates. Okay? And so you sort of keep it in mind. And so whenever you have to make the work for the analysis of the equation, you really need to work on this expression, which is psi prime star is the evaluation of the test function in those velocities. And this is what is known like the Poisson lemma. Getting control of that term in terms of the previous one, it would give you a way to control the gain by the loss, and this is through the means of well-known Poisson lemma. Okay, so here, for some reason, I shuffled the slides, obviously. You get the nice, that should have been the slide ahead, the energy identity I was talking about, that I applied Jensen's inequality to get my energy inequality. Okay. All right, because of, and this is a problem you did not mention, Isaac, so I have to mention it. I was counting on it, which is that's right. Which is the, is what happens, another way to restore, I mean, after the introduction that Isaac said that you would have, if nothing is pumped into the system, this equation eventually should go to Coulomb states, and I will go back to that because we were able to do some analysis for that case. But a way to restore heat somehow has been proposed as making a random acceleration, think of the Langevin equation associated to free motion with a sort of random stochastic forcing term, and then when the parties encounter, they collide inelastically. Okay? If you would do that, I would like to get an assurance that you can do the reduction of an n-particle system to an equation. In fact, you would get the Boltzmann equation plus the diffusion term, because you would combine the BGKY hierarchy with the Itô calculus, I guess. And I don't know if there is any ground for that. But in any case, it has been proposed and we have studied. The interesting thing is that particle simulations, when they did the acceleration, this is a paper of the group of Sweeney and Chatuk, 99, in physics, previous physics, I think it was journal. Okay. They report, which was already report by Ernst and Vinoche, and I'll go back to that, that the tails get deviated when you look or compare them with the Gaussian tails. And so the issue is, how can you explain that? So you might want to be motivated to study such a kinetic equation, which now you have the Boltzmann equation for hard spheres. Again, you might think with a variable hard spheres rate, or like I said, the hard spheres, the molecule, maximum molecules in between. Which in this case, the difference is that when you compute the energy equation, you get an energy inequality that now has an extra term, which is a constant that comes from the heat equation, and that basically allows you for asymptotic energies which will not be zero. So eventually you would have states which are going to be stationary, time independent, and they will not necessarily have variance converging to zero. They will not degenerate as a singular distribution. This is basically pretty much of the work we've been focusing has been into this kind of equations. A couple of remarks. In the elastic case, you will have no stationary states for such a system, and it's a very simple calculation of taking second moments. The second moment of the elastic collision operator is zero because it conserves energy, and the second moment of the heat equation, you integrate twice by parts and you get a constant. So it would be no way to expect that the distribution function would be, I mean, any distribution function that you want to solve in L1 that is integral would have to be zero. Okay, the other comment is that in the inelastic case, you get an a priori bound for positive stationary solutions in L2, L12, depending on what I would call this quantity, which is a natural bound for the energy inequality. And that actually expects you that if you solve it, that we somehow did, you can get a distribution a solution, which is actually a C-infinite function in a Schwarz class with decays, all moments bounded, as good as a Gaussian. However, we show it's not going to be a Gaussian. Okay, but it has all the properties of a good probability. All moments are defined at all orders. Okay, pseudo-Maxwellian molecule. This is something that we actually, this was our first original attempt on the field, and this is something we did with Jose Carrillo. And Sasha Bobby left was an observation that after we convinced Sasha that this was a very good model to get involved in, since Sasha says, if one could actually make some assumption, which I think that means field theory, or the assumption that you said that the collision frequency scales as 1 over thermal speed, and somehow you play into that, that is equivalent to pull out of that, you know, the hard sphere, think it was one, which I said it will not be there, comes out like having a constant in velocity, right? It would be a function that depends on time, and it's the thermal energy outside the integral part, and in that case, you get, for the collision operator, what is the well-known Maxwell molecule model, with advantage that because you have the energy identity here and you pull this, you know, thermal speed scale out, right, you get there still the same exponent that you would get for hard spheres, but it's an energy identity, not an energy inequality, because in Maxwell molecules, it's exact the calculation. Okay, so we were very excited at the time. We thought we understood a lot, because we were essentially getting somehow the right scale with the energy as a function of the restitution coefficient, and we did with Carlo and Jose another sort of expansion on Maxwell molecules on which we were able to somehow at the time believe that that was the right way to target many other phenomena for the heated, for the equation, inelastic equation with a heated path. However, it was pointed out to us, before I move on, let me say what the Maxwell molecules is and why does it work, okay? It works essentially because Maxwell molecule models are friendly to the Fourier analysis, right? It's not quite the linear theory, but as close as you can think of, okay? And so what they have is that when you look at the Fourier transform equation, you reduce the problem to an equation for in a new variable. It's a non-local equation, but it's an equation that is invariant under rotations. You can do solve it by expansion of a spherical harmonic, the theory of special functions, and this is what Bobby Lev did. And in fact, he had done it for the elastic case, and this says we can do it for the inelastic case. Then we have to trace down all the theorems very carefully, but essentially you solve by trying to do series expansions, approximations of power Taylor expansions in Fourier space. You know, the coefficients of the power Taylor expansion in Fourier space correspond to moments in physical and velocity space. And then, because in Fourier space you have a recursion formula, and in this case were recursions inequalities, we were able to study the summability, and that allow us to somehow recover the whole, or at least to have very nice constructed solutions by method of wild sums. We start to study self-similar solutions and all sorts of things in the Fourier space framework. However, this is a nice remark because Bobby Lev has contributed recently quite a lot, and I would like to say it with Toscani in this problem. The problem is that if you do this, if you do the Fourier analysis for subsimilar equations and you assume alpha to be constant, in our work we show that the moments would become negative for large moments, which you really no good physics. In fact, we can say there is somehow we can construct a sequence of, you know, a specific restitution coefficient that would go to one for which all moments that will be positive and well-defined. But very recently, Bobby Lev actually showed with Toscani and Cercignani that they can construct solutions which are going to be certainly not in the form of power series as we propose it, but that would have polynomial decay. So there would certainly be one moment and on for which you did not get bounded boundedness of the moment. So the next item I want to discuss towards the analysis is the work we have done with Vlad Panferov and Cedric Villani, which is actually answer what it was the problem was posed by von Neumann, Ernst and von Neumann in Granular Matter 1997. That is the first reference we have on this issue of trying to solve inelastic Boltzmann plus the diffusion equation. And I sort of write it as a conjecture. That's a bit stretch from my side. I just want to say that they write a paper of physics and they said this is what it should happen. And they give a lot of numerics and things, and they look into what they happen, and basically it's the existence of global intrans solutions for data, in L2 intersection L12, uniqueness of the initial value problem, existence of a stationary state, they said should be nice, we said it's in a Schwarz class, the overpopulated fat tail with respect to Gaussians. I want to say, because it's also in the audience, Reinhard Illner with Cercignan and Stoica solved the case of Maxwell molecules with diffusion. I think you came up basically solving the existence equation problem at the time, and I'm not sure you addressed the tail decay. I think that was addressed by Cercignan and Bobby Lev. So when Vlad arrived to Austin, it was... let's see, 3-4 years ago. Again, we were fortunate enough that Cedric Villani came for a visit with perhaps a different intent, and we immediately got him to ask a bunch of questions, and he immediately said, well, maybe if you have diffusion, you can do the kind of things we have done with Devillette, who I don't know if he's in the audience. Maybe he left. Oh, okay, good. And so I'm trying to acknowledge and for the Landau equation, which is it has to somehow a small diffusion built in a sense that allows you to get L2 estimates. And if you differentiate, perhaps, you know, H1, H2, and Sobolev kind of estimates. And also, at the same time, estimates in probability sense with all moments in L1K. Because, after all, this is what you want. And indeed, it works actually very nicely. We work very hard with Vlad to get the right formulation of the Posner lemma, which we have it now in a sharper form, and I will go back to that in a minute. That's the first step. That's what I said in the Maxwell monetary formulation. That is what you need to control. You need somehow to say that the gain term, which seems to be the bad one, and this is the homogeneous theory, okay? I have no space variables here, no boundaries. Is going to be controlled somehow by the laws in moments. Okay? And that's what the Posner lemma does. Once you have that, then you use the ideas of Laurent de Villet in getting recursion formulas for moment bounds. You can pull it in inelastic theory. After all, you know, if you think if this was a small deviation from the elastic case, it's not a big surprise. This also the Laplacian here, but that somehow puts an extra term in the recursion formula, which is lower order, so it doesn't affect, in principle, the results of what you want. So you get all the properties of, because of the Laplacian of the regularization with respect to time of initial data might not be so good, and so on. Then the next step is, once you have the moment bounds, you need to control the collision operator in LP with weights. Okay, that's a sort of bootstrapping technique. That was this idea was sort of used by, I guess, Gustafsson. I don't remember, said 88, but certainly Villani and Mohol get a better way of doing estimates in very recently and dealing with this collision operator as a semi-linear or bilinear form, or using the structure of the bilinear form in LP weighted spaces. Then you combine with the what I think it worked for the Landau equation, which is you start to gain regularity by doing a weighted interpolation in between the somehow the interplay of the diffusion moment bounds and the Gustafsson, if you wish, bounds for the gain for the collision operator. And there you also will combine, I mean, the diffusion brings up the fact that you choose the way to do Poincaré inequalities and somehow Sobolev inequalities to get the right play for which you gain enough regularity so that you can bootstrap. The equation is actually invariant, it's Cascalidian invariance, you can differentiate it very nicely. You get another equation which you can pull the machinery. And we carry on with all these other estimates, and then a typical Leray-Schauder fixed-point argument on writing it, you know, in a linear form with a heat equation would give you the existence of a classical solution, infinite differentiable in time after finite time, no matter, I mean, all you need is that the initial data is in L2, L1-2. And this is a big deviation from the classical elastic theory. Next comes the uniqueness. The uniqueness, you do it using the method of de Blasio, Michler, and Bember, and this is what was part of the discussion yesterday. You do that uniqueness by taking a test function, which is somehow a moment of sign, and that's what it works. In a sense, it's like dealing like the kind of Kruskal uniqueness theorems for conservation. But that was, we really copy what is done by them. The initial data has to be in L1-3. You could do it to L1-2, but that would require to do a lot of more estimates that we leave for somebody else. Then it comes the highlight of the lecture, and I hope you give me five minutes for this. Okay? Can I? Okay. The highlight of the lecture is, can we actually say something about the tails? The tails, the answer is yes, we can. Let me start for what we did first in the original paper. You can easily get a lower bound, and this is something I want to bring up because the Boltzmann equation, I mean, the way we did it is somehow looking at the Boltzmann equation with like a pointwise local PD. We had the diffusion, we knew how to compare, or the heat equation. We throw the gain operator out. You look at large relative velocities, the loss operator, which had the collision frequency for large relative velocities, would give us something that is bounded by a local form in the PDE. And then you said, well, here you have an inequality, then look for radial solutions associated to either the stationary or the time-dependent problem. For that, you can construct it exactly. They are going to be these radial solutions. Then you have, you can cook up a comparison result. In particular, we know the solution is very regular, so we can do basically any strong form of a comparison. Works. Pardon? Pardon? Yes, that it gives it, yeah, it's for V larger than R. Okay? Yes, and in fact, you can say that, it's not this simple, okay? I know Vlad is sort of spanking me and said, we have, for every single statement, we have to do 2-3 pages of writing. But you sort of, when you look at large velocities, that gives us the control of the tape, but then we look inside and control the solution or the barrier slightly different. So yeah. That is not that simple, right? Okay. Next. Okay. How about the upper pointwise bound? Well, that we couldn't get. So Bobylev comes into the scene again, and we discussed the problem with him, and he pointed us out that why should anybody care about it pointwise bounds of the distribution? You don't observe it. What you care is about moments. And then what he says is what one should be able to show is that the distribution function, if decays, will decay in such a way on which you would do the weighted exactly with the decay that you would expect, right, and get something that is bounded. And indeed, we were able to prove that. And here I want to say a very quick couple of things. We were able to prove it finding different exponents that correspond to different forcing terms. For instance, what happens instead of diffusion, we put shear flow, or set similar solutions for hard spheres. Okay, you get all different decay exponents. Okay, and one of the let me just finish by this slide. That requires two things, or three things. One is a very sharp form of the Posner lemma. That was the title of the lecture, how sharp we can go. Okay, and I will show it here. We can actually make it to be very sharp. This is the sharpest version so far in the literature, because it tells us exactly how the gain operator decays with respect to the loss. Okay? And that is independent of the forcing. This is just inelastic theory. Okay? The other thing is that once you have that, you can then do an upper pointwise bound. The upper pointwise bound is going to be doing by combining the following three ingredients. First of all, find a comparison theorem again. And for that, you use the bilinear structure of the gain operator, construct a suitable barrier function, compare to obtain pointwise bounds. Now, the construction of the barrier, which is the most delicate point in this case, because you can write the comparison after you are able to say that there is such inequality, that you have a function which is called H, the barrier, for which you have that inequality. That will take if you could actually say that the gain, weighted gain, but that function you want to have does not grow faster than what you get from the loss term. Okay? And this is, and I want to give full credit to Vlad Panferov for this calculation, which I actually found it amazing, maybe because I'm not that much of an expert. The estimate is the following. You look at the Q plus operator and you want to see how it deviates with respect to that barrier, which you expect to see what our Ernst said. It would be e to the minus v to the 3 hat. Okay? in that case, what you do is you would actually use, just at this point, you compare the gain with the loss, okay, with this particular weight. In that case, you would actually do the calculation, which is rewriting the gain term with the Kalman variables. And now he observed that indeed, this calculation, you can do it with any exponential function. H could be, you know, the Gaussian. H could be the to the 3/2, to the 1/2. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's just inelasticity versus this weight or elasticity itself. It's just the gain operator for which, in that case, you would always be able to control that the L infinite norm, or the sup of this quantity, is in fact being bounded by the L1 norm of this, but this is exactly the Bobylev result for elastic case. In elastic case, we do it with Bobylev, so it's our result, on which, in that case, the remainder is going to be, in the case of elastic spheres, is simply a constant. And so it gives you an upper point we found for the elastic case as well, for Boltzmann. Elastic Boltzmann with no extra terms, okay? But it also gives us a remainder. The remainder is less than 1 if you, for instance, do it for 3/2 or you do it for any other thing. I should say, let me close, that we have done the study of the experiments, of the tails, and you change the forcing of the tail, you change the decay exponents, you put Gaussians, you also change the decay exponents. So indeed, this is a conversation we have before your lecture. You can play and fit into the equation whatever tail you want as the forcing term, and you would pull it out. And yeah, you could. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.